Hey, Warners, this is your warning that the following episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About went a bit rogue from the beginning. You know, one of those episodes where we started the show before we started the show, you know, we were recording and then things happened. So put on your big girl panties and buckle up for the ride with Rachel Pitts, Keith Walters, and yours truly, Gina Tremarco. Doesn't it look good?
It looks great.
Thank you.
It's showing up as so auburn.
It's so auburn. It's very, yeah. It's a new red color that I'm wearing. You would know if you were ever in Dallas. When I'm in Dallas, you would see it.
Yeah.
But you're never there when I'm there.
That's not on purpose.
Which got me to thinking. You want to know what I'm thinking?
I'd love to know what you're thinking.
That you should just let me stay at your house because you're not there.
How do you clean?
I do clean.
Do you cook?
I do cook. You know, we can make a deal when you're gone. I will clean the house and I will make some food and leave it in the refrigerator for you.
Cool. Alicia might get a little upset. But.
Who's Alicia? Who's Alicia?
She's my housewoman. No, she's my cleaning lady. She is this wonderful woman that comes into my house and cleans.
Okay, so good, because I really don't want to clean.
But she's used to cleaning clean.
So, okay. Well, you're one of those guys. You clean the house before the cleaning lady gets there?
Well, I clean the house as I go all the time.
Okay. So. All right, well, then I'll cook and leave meals behind.
Italian?
Well, yeah. I make a really good lasagna.
Good, yeah. Okay.
If you're into that kind of thing. Yeah. Just saying. Yeah. I'm just trying to get you to commit on a recording that I can stay at your house. Nope. I'll get you. I'm pretty persuasive. I've persuaded you into other things.
Yeah, you don't have a hard time with commitment. So.
Yes, I've heard. So this is a rogue show with just you and me.
Yes, it's a two anchor, two host show.
It's the two host show with the OGs. We're down with the OG. Oh, you don't know that lingo, do you? Ask your son. He can.
Okay.
The originals.
Okay.
We were originally...
The originals, yes.
We came together originally, remember?
Come together.
That's what we call the OG.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. Got it. And we miss Rachel.
We do miss Rachel.
Rachel is usually here.
She
couldn't be here today.
Now she's spending quality time with her daughter, took her to some concert, and she wasn't even sure what concert she was taking her to, but it's what her daughter wanted to do.
Yeah. Doesn't really matter.
Doesn't really matter. Quality time. Which leaves you and I together. The reality is our schedules are so busy. So every now and then it'll be different.
Yeah, which is good.
So,
Gina, what are we podcasting about today?
Well, my idea, I came across this article from a really good friend of mine, Michael Schein, who this is kind of an ode to Michael because Michael, I met him at a Salesforce conference several years ago. And he was kind of the one that pushed me into starting a podcast because that's what his company helps brand thought leaders. So he really inspired and pushed me on podcasting. I took a book writing class with him too, and he's on me about why that hasn't happened yet. but anyway, he writes for a number of publications, and he's very much into hype and how hype is used. And he wrote an article recently, and it says, the book that came out of the experience, The Game, Penetrating the Secret Society of Pickup Artists. So this is a book that became a bestseller, and he went on to write an article about it. What's interesting is, I don't know if anybody was ever familiar with it, there was a show many, many years ago, a reality show, and it was like the Pickup Artist Show. Where they brought men on the show, and taught them how to be pickup artists, how to pick up women in bars.
Interesting.
It was fascinating, a fascinating show, because it was so disgusting. I was fascinated by it. So let's teach men how to be sleaze bags in a bar.
Yeah, but now wait a minute. Aren't we just teaching sales techniques? And doesn't that kind of create the same stereotype of all salespeople are used car salespeople?
Good point. Okay.
Because, you know, it would seem, I have skimmed the article. I haven't gone in depth yet, but learning how to relate.
So I'm going to, and you, we might hear some paper rustling. So I'm putting out there as a disclaimer because, so that Doug doesn't tell me don't rustle papers, which he'll give me a post note on that. But because I want to make sure that I'm hitting everything in this article, Michael put a disclaimer on it. He said, I submitted this article to a media outlet that regularly features my work, and it was deemed too controversial for publication. They may have a point. That said, I'm posting it directly on LinkedIn to give the ideas an airing. I'm open to anyone's opinion about whether I went too far. I'm always looking to learn more about myself. So he wanted to elaborate on this pickup artist concept because in his words, he says, in other words, the best pickup artists are master salespeople. Right? So think about it. Like,
I would agree.
You know, a man who's really got game, or a woman who's really got game, right? Who can kind of mesmerize and convince someone to go home with them or give them a phone number or whatever it is your objective is. It's kind of an interesting concept. So there were five lessons that anyone who ever has to sell anything to anyone should study and master. And the first one being craft your external packaging. I'm going to read all five and then we can kind of dig
through.
Craft your external packaging, number one. Number two, master intermittent reinforcement. Number three, create the perception of autonomy. Number four, focus on self-regulation. And number five, engage in relentless experimentation, which I really, was that the one I really liked? Well, we'll dig into them. So digging into the first one, craft your external packaging. I'm going to just read a little bit from this article so we can dig through it. One of the main reasons for Neil Strauss's radical transformation from geek to Casanova was that he had one of the greatest pickup artists of all time as his mentor. Mystery is the mentor. Mystery was a dark and charismatic figure, instantly identifiable by his fuzzy top hat. He looked really weird if you've seen pictures of him.
Well, I guess that's actually his picture at the top of this article.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that is a
picture. So when we post a link to this article on the website, everybody can see Mystery here.
Mystery, he's wearing jewelry. He looks a little goth. He's got eyeliner, painted black fingernails. It goes on, when he entered a room, a woman's eyes floated in his direction before he ever said a word. Now, if I saw that guy walk in a room, I'd be like, what the what? I don't know if I'd be mesmerized by Mystery, but I guess he'd get my attention.
So, you know, one of the sales, what do you call it? Sales schools of thought is the Sandler sales school of thought.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you've talked with, you know, one of the top guys there, Tom Neeson, I think, on one of your programs.
I've interviewed the CEO
Sandler. And, you know, one of the techniques they talk about in Sandler that is so important, I find it so useful, is this technique called pattern interrupt.
Oh, yeah.
And pattern interrupt is when you engage a prospect in sales that you don't do the standard, hi, I'm Keith, I'm from XYZ company, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Yeah. Because that's the pattern. And that's a little bit of what is happening here. This is pattern interrupt. Mm-hmm. This is creating notice. If you never get noticed, you're never going to pick up anybody. Or if you never get noticed, then you're never going to sell anything. And you know what else is really interesting about this? one of the first things that I thought about was his outfit, that is a little effeminate.
Yeah.
And that's relating to the prospect.
Ooh. Well, I mean, that's an interesting thought. Now, from a female perspective, I don't know if I like a man who is effeminate in his attire. I mean, I guess if that's what you're trying to attract.
Well, this is a really interesting topic. Like I said, I haven't studied this a lot, but looking at it from a sales perspective, once I've got your attention, I can move beyond what got your attention.
Okay.
The first step, though, is to get your attention.
All right, that's a good point.
I mean, it's like, look at it from marketing. How do I send a marketing piece that gets your attention? Before I can move any further, that's what's got to happen.
All right, I can buy that, because if I create the analogy and relate it back to my previous dating life, there have been men that I was like, oh my God, so not my type. And then they got my attention and I started talking to them because I'm a little more attracted to intellect than I am physicality. I mean, physicality is the first thing, but a really smart, funny man, he could be really short and ugly and I still might like him.
Yeah. You know, there's one other thing that kind of stuck out at me as you introed this, and then as I think about this picture, looking at the picture of mystery here in this article and so forth. You know, if you're going to wear that, you better own it. Right? You really probably can't slink into a room with that if you're going to wear it. And I think somewhere in the article here it says that, you know, he just kind of owned it.
You moved from the microphone.
Sorry.
That's okay.
So Mystery was a dark and charismatic figure, instantly identifiable by his fuzzy top hat and so forth. Mm-hmm. When he entered a room, women's eyes floated in his direction. And so that also says is that somewhat about confidence.
Oh, yeah.
And there, you know, when you're selling, confidence is key. And I don't know how many women I've talked to who say that, well, you know, attractive is great and funny is great, none of that, but confidence is a key.
Confidence is sexy as hell.
Yeah.
Give me a confident man. And there are men who are confident on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, as a confident woman, and then all of a sudden you get to know them and they're the most insecure
mm-hmm.
things out there.
Yeah.
Don't know what that's about.
But it's the same way in sales, right? I mean, if you approach a prospect confidently, like, well, I don't care if you buy this or not. This is great stuff. You're stupid if you don't.
Hey, but you know what? That's a style that people use.
Mm-hmm.
That is a style that people use. Like, hey, you know what? I don't really need you. I don't need this sale. So, you know.
Yeah, and that's when you don't need something. You know, when you're desperate for a sale is when you're not going to make a sale.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's the opposite of that.
Same with trying to pick up someone. If you're trying too hard, like we could, a woman can smell that.
Okay.
I don't know about a man, but a woman can, like, I'm like, dude, really? That is A, the worst pickup line. B, you're just trying too hard.
Right.
Yeah. So they all should go to this mystery school. I don't know if he's still doing this. He started out, his name was Eric James Horvat Markovic. That's right. his original name.
Just call me Eric.
Yeah. What the many imitators of Mystria who emerged in the wake of the game's publication failed to grasp was that his packaging was rooted in the core of who he was. So back when he was Eric, that very long name, he was already a fan of the theatrical, magical, and macabre in the form of Dungeons and Dragons. It was from that stereotypically unseductive starting place that he would go on to craft his eminently attractive persona. Okay, now, first of all, Dungeons and Dragons does not get me excited as a woman. Now, there are some women that are totally into it. I have a really good friend, Kim May, or Kim Phelan. I always screw up her name, but Kim is a big listener. You could be into that kind of thing, but I don't really think of like a D&D guy as like, damn, he's hot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but that kind of gets to the point. One of the points of the article is, you know, hype versus, I don't know if it's reality or whatever, but you have to have a form of authenticity in what it is you're doing.
Yeah.
And then how do you magnify what it is that you are?
Yeah, really good point.
Rather than creating something new.
That's a really good point. I think you can mesh that. Yeah. Actually, that comes to mind in a little bit of a reality. We know my personality can be big and bold sometimes. Right. And so when I'm in Dallas, although I got an offer to office at a new place, I got to tell you that story. But I office at VIP recruiting at Casey's office. And sometimes I'll even like do some unsolicited coaching while I'm sitting there in the bullpen with them. And one of the women who works there refers to me as a cartoon.
Really?
Yeah. She's like, "You're such a cartoon." And I'm like, okay.
How do you take that?
I got a kick out of it personally. Because cartoons are fun.
Mm-hmm. And engaging.
Engaging, goofy, silly.
Yeah.
They make you smile. So to me, a cartoon is an exaggeration of my persona.
So yeah. It's you in a way. It's magnified.
It's magnified Gina.
Yeah.
It's Gina times 10.
Yeah.
Or 2. Gina times 2.
It depends upon the day and how much Red Bull you've had.
I don't even do Red Bull. I'm a cartoon without it. Even though our good friend Jason refers to me as a mosquito drinking Red Bull.
Yeah.
On the culture index.
Yeah, you know, later on in this same number one here that we're talking about, it does go on to say it's not simply enough to don an expensive suit or, from a sales perspective, produce a slick PowerPoint. You've got to magnify parts of yourself that are truly unique.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't fake it. You know, I this kind of makes me think about myself. I could never pull that off.
The fuzzy hat, the and eyeliner.
Well, it kind of depends upon how much bourbon I had, I guess. But I don't know. It's kind of fun to be challenged sometimes. Push yourself into a discomfort zone.
Thank you for the tip.
But, you know, my take would be to put on an expensive suit and a really bright shirt and stick out that way, you know.
What color would the shirt be? I'm just curious.
Pink.
Real men wear pink.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite colors to wear.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know, because I just bought you a shirt, but it wasn't pink.
No, black's the other one. But
I bought you a black shirt.
Oh, thank you.
Wait till you see it. You're going to be so
good. Oh, cool.
So excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to show you. Wait, hold on. I'll see if you can. Oh, no. Wait, hold on. You can. Look at that. You see the logo?
Oh, look at that. Yeah, that looks really good.
For those who can't see it, I got some shirts logoed. Because people started, I was just testing out the logo with an embroidery company that we use for our other companies. And I was wearing it in Dallas. And then Casey Hasten's like, "Where do I get one of those?" I just had it made for myself. She's like, "I want one." I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I'll make you one. Anyway, makes me stand out.
You already stand out, Gina. Makes you stand out more.
More. God, because the world needs more of that.
World needs more, Gina. Mm.
There's so much I want to say about that.
feel free.
It's like, you know, if the world... Yeah, if the world needs more Gina, I think a TV show would be a good idea.
Ah, that's an interesting concept.
It's an interesting concept, right?
There's for those of you listening, there's something else going on here, but we're going to go to point number two. In the,
so, well, that's
called a classic redirect.
I'm very good in sales. So anyway, which is this, I got to read this line now that I just did that. The most effective persuaders, influencers, seducers, and salespeople carefully construct an external package that magnifies those parts of themselves that are truly unique.
Yeah. At my last company, we had, you know, we started off with a sales team of zero and we grew to, I can't remember how many, we grew to 30 or something like that. But, you know, one of my sales guys, and he turned out to be really good. He had to go through some training and some adjusting and so forth, but he was English and he had this British accent and he had lived in, I think he's lived in the United States for, I don't know, 10, 12 years or whatever, but he honed his British accent and he kept it just, he worked on it all the time. And when he got on the phone doing sales, it amped up. And it was great. It was sticky. People would like listen, right? So it was something he had authentic, and then he really focused on packaging it, and it was very effective for him.
A good British accent will get me to do anything.
Uh-huh. But you can't fake. Maybe you probably could because you're so good at voices and everything. But most people can't fake a good British accent.
So. No. But you know, a real British accent creates, again, the mystery of you having more of a conversation. Like, oh, where are you from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially when people confuse an English accent with an Australian accent or right. a South African accent, right? It drives all three of those groups crazy when you're like, oh, you're from England. No, I'm from Australia.
Yeah. So he actually had this line, you know, because people would ask that. He said, oh, I'm from Texas. Can't you tell by my accent? And of course, you know, then that gets the whole laugh. And
well, I often do that when I'm being in the South now. When they're like, where are you from? I'm like, South Carolina, can't you tell?
Yeah.
They're like, what?
I didn't hear that in your voice. You're from South Carolina? Oh, darling.
Or sometimes I will go into a Southern accent and people get angry about it because they're like, are you making fun of us? It's not even that good. I'm like, wow. I'm just trying to copy you. Bless your heart.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Bless your heart.
Bless your heart. Bless your heart. They don't know any better.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I love
for those of you who are not from the South, there's a whole meaning behind that phrase. Of yeah. Bless your heart.
Up north, it's a two-word phrase.
Yeah, it starts with F.
Yeah, exactly. Although sometimes bless your heart's not a bad thing. I mean,
yeah.
It's like, oh, bless his heart that he's going through that.
Yeah. In the South, we know how to put a knife in with a smile.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So number two, master intermittent reinforcement. That's a really big phrase. I'm going to just read some of this. In the mid-20th century, behaviorist B.F. Skinner conducted experiments on pigeons in order to determine how various schedules of rewards would affect their willingness to engage in certain actions. What Skinner found was that if he gave pigeons a reward time, they did something he wanted them to do. They complied only part of the time. I find this so interesting. However, if he rewarded the pigeons only sometimes at unpredictable intervals, their compliance became completely consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings aren't all that different from pigeons. When you reward people consistently, your ability to make them follow you will be weak. It is when you find ways to offer rewards in a sporadic and inconsistent manner that their desire to follow you will become nearly unbreakable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's classic human behavior.
I love this one.
Yeah. So, you know, when you reward someone consistently, the reward becomes an entitlement.
Oh.
I'm entitled to that.
Yeah, because you always give it to me.
Yeah. So now I need more. Yeah.
That's a really good point. I think about from a leadership standpoint. Sometimes I feel bad that I'm not consistent with saying thank you, good job, acknowledging those things. So I'm not good at like doing it all the time. So now in hindsight, it's maybe not a bad thing, because when people do hear that from me, it means more.
Yes. Yeah. And there's two sides to that argument, but I think it's so true. And I think, you know, from a sales perspective, this kind of is where selling from a script is dangerous to a degree, because in a script, you know, the script might say to the salesperson, this is where you say something nice about the person, or, you know, you become too gratuitous.
Yeah.
And it just kind of like this, it starts feeling, you know, just like scripted, insincere. And I think it's something that in some sales training people talk about, okay, you need to constantly reinforce. And I think I agree completely with this. And there was a pickup, I don't know if this is in the same, if Mysteries or whoever wrote this was in the same school or whatever, but there was this idea of picking up women for guys to go pick up women, that you engage them and then you disrespect them. You diss them.
What?
And so
this is like they were taught to do this?
Yeah. So for example, this particular technique was you there's two or three women in a group, and there's one really attractive that you want to whose attention you want to get. And so you go up and you get their attention, and then you focus your attention on someone else, on not who you're really targeting.
I don't know.
And it creates, what about me? What about me? What about me? What about me?
There's something about that I don't like.
It's pretty manipulative.
Okay. But maybe that's why I don't like it. It feels manipulative.
It is manipulative. Yeah.
Hey, Warners, you have probably heard me talk on several occasions about how much I love wearing red lipstick. Lipstick is just one of those things that makes me feel good about how I look. And sometimes a little extra enhancement to my lips from Dermavogue doesn't hurt either. I've known Dr. Jim Turek of Dermavogue for years. He is not only my doctor who keeps my body healthy, he and his Dermavogue team keep my face looking healthy and maybe a little younger, maybe. I mean, I love it when people say, something looks different about your face, but they can't really tell, because that's really what you want. You want to go to a place that makes your face look as good and it makes people wonder what happened. So what's really cool about Dermavogue being our premier sponsor of this show is the fact that I'm a client, and I was a client before they became a partner of the show. So we're excited about that. Dermavogue has been offering the greater Myrtle Beach area the best in cosmetic and aesthetic dermatology since 2003. Opened by Dr. James Turek, Dermavogue combines expert medical knowledge with cutting-edge technology, bringing you the most effective, flawless solutions to any skincare or cosmetic need. Their patients enjoy only the absolute best in laser technology, including photodynamic laser therapy, hydrofacials, and V-beam laser treatments, as well as the latest fillers such as Botox, skin peels, facials, and more. At Dermavogue, they engage you in the process of total body health to ensure your satisfaction with their comprehensive selection of the most up-to-date, non-invasive cosmetic, dermatology, and spa treatments. It's human nature to want to look your best, right? Let Dermavogue help you get there. Schedule your consultation today by calling 843-357-2444 or visit dermavogue.com and tell them that the Women Your Mother Warned You About sent you. You can also find them on our website. Go check it out. And this is a whole different topic. We talked about this on another episode about attachment theory, because I'm very big into attachment theory. How you attach as a baby and how that carries into adulthood. But there's basically three forms of attachment: secure, anxious and avoidant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the anxious attachment person, which is what I identify with, is the one who had inconsistent love mm-hmm. from a parent. Mm-hmm. And so they're constantly like waiting for that love because they never know when they're going to get it again. It's totally inconsistent.
Which is this behavior that it's right. this rule is reinforcing.
Right. And what attachment theory says is that avoidant attachment personalities are most attracted to the anxiety attachment personalities because it helps reinforce their own egos, but it creates that much more anxiety. Maybe that's why I got triggered. I was like, oh, no, that triggers me. Do not play that game with me. Same in sales. Don't play that game with me.
Don't play the occasional reinforcement?
Yeah. Mm-mm.
I think most people react positively to that, though. They, it's just what you said before with employees. It is when it happens, it's big and it means more. And because it means more, then you want more. And then so you start.
Yeah.
When it comes back again, it's more. And then, you know, I would look from a sales cycle perspective, I would look at if that is effective in creating interest from your prospect, then it's an interesting technique. And I think then the thing you want to do is as the prospect becomes more of a customer, then that's where you really want to move to attachment. You don't want that behavior with a customer.
Right. I guess that's but really what I'm saying. Like from a leadership standpoint, I see it working. I'm trying to, maybe I should read more of this. It really is a push-pull dynamic, mm-hmm. right? It's the push, yeah. the pull, the push, the pull that I've experienced in many relationships.
But then it also, you know, in talking with people about relationships, you know, one of the things that people, if we go to this whole pickup thing, you know, in talking to people and talking to women, what I hear is also that I don't want somebody that's needy. And that is oftentimes portrayed in constant reinforcement, if you will, constant praise, constant, mm-hmm. because it's a drive to have it reflected back.
Yeah, the constant would make me feel like it's fake.
Mm-hmm. I used to buy suits at this, back when I wore a suit every day to work. Wow. I used to buy suits at this shop in the gallery in Dallas. And this one sales guy, I could not stand it when he was the salesperson that I got, because he was just so gratuitous when I walked in. And it was like, ha ha, you know, just get me away from this guy.
You'll have that.
So you'll too much rewarding.
Too much rewarding. I like this next part. Members of the pickup artist community call this what we've been talking about, cat string theory. I was like, ooh. In the game, mystery describes when you make a string dance above a cat's head, it will go crazy trying to get it. But as soon as you let go of the string and it drops right between the cat's paws, it just looks at the string for a second and then walks away. It's bored. It doesn't want it anymore.
It's so true. What a great analogy.
Right?
And what it just goes to that comment that I was making about the approach that was, and again, it may be out of the same thing, is of dissing somebody who is, because this, instead of just praise, because that's kind of dropping the string right in front of them, it's turning it into a game.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, it really gave me some insight on relationships.
So tell me about that. What insight did it give you from a string dancing?
I mean, basically how they're using it, because they're using it for picking up people. But if you can, You could do that in the when you're trying to seduce someone or win someone over initially, is like, here, you want it? Here, yeah. Here it is, taking it away. It's the push-pull, basically. Uh-huh. But it's like, here, you can have this. You know, I do this in some of my, it's interesting, I do this in some of my, and it's not even, I'm not thinking about it in this way when I do it. So for instance, when I submit proposals for training, mm-hmm. I now have put on there at the bottom after the, you know, pricing, I say, you know, I have a little disclaimer that says this proposal only good through October 31st, 2019. Like, right. I put it on there because, A, it's, you need to make a decision. Don't come back to me next year and be like, remember that proposal? Because that's happened to me. And then I stick to what I originally proposed. Now I put that on there. And I've had people come back to me going, hey, I know we haven't signed this contract yet, but it says on here there's this date, and we just want to make sure it's still okay.
Right. So you've broken up the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Not. Yeah, you know, it points out in this article, the key to a successful seduction is to not respond to every action in a way life has trained, right? Mm-hmm. So you're kind of breaking that. Oh, it says October 30th, but she won't pay any attention to that.
It's vital to vary things up, engage in a dance, and generate a push-pull dynamic.
Yeah, yeah. And I go back to you know, our friend Tom Neeson and the things that he teaches and so forth. And I've watched him sell, and none of his actions are what you would expect from a salesperson. Now, his degree is in psychology. and he will always work with this, you know, not what you expect. It's like, oh, this really isn't what you really don't want this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I've used that too. I'm thinking about the same client who asked me about the expiration date, because it's I'm dealing with it's a government contract. So, you know, there's all these rules and procurement and that whole process. But when they initially called me, I basically said to him, I'm like, I'm pretty sure you guys can't afford me. I'm like, so let's have this conversation now, because I don't want to waste your time or my time. I don't want to put a proposal together knowing that you can't afford me.
I think that is, from a sales perspective, one of the best lines you can use.
Yeah.
One of the best pickup lines in sales.
Do you?
Uh-huh. I don't think you can afford me. And if it was in a relationship, I don't think you can handle me. Sorry, I don't think you can handle me.
I would also like to say, in a relationship, I don't think you can afford me. Or handle me.
Oh, Lordy. You know, one of the you know, this also brings to mind a podcast we did before about the power of no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked in that podcast about, in the sales cycle, start going for the no. Well, nobody expects that.
Right. Instead of going into the chase,
try to cut the chase off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not even using it as a technique. I think, you know, it's so funny over the years, because I've never considered myself a salesperson. And then I've constantly been pursued to sell. And I'm like, I'm not a salesperson. And then I finally realized I was a salesperson, right? So it finally came to me, because I'm not actually thinking about techniques. I'm just kind of, in all seriousness, improvising and paying attention to human behavior,
mm-hmm.
and responding to that. And you get enough people saying to you, you're too expensive. So now I just started telling people, I'm really expensive. And that seems to create more intrigue,
mm-hmm.
because it's like, I'm telling them they can't have it. And they're like, well, wait a second, I want
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all mm-hmm. of a sudden they find money for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's no different than, why do people buy super expensive cars? You know, they don't need that, but there's this intrigue. And how do I stretch and take out a big loan or something to do that?
Mm-hmm. People will always find the money for the things that they need and they want, period.
For the things they want. More so than the things they need.
Well, yes, more so than the things that they need. But if you show that they need it, right? If you can, right.
if you make them feel that they need it,
right? Like, oh, this is going to change your life or change your business, and they're like, "Whoa, I didn't even know I needed that."
Yeah, that actually gets into that third point of this article, which is create the perception of autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in one of the paragraphs, it says if you want to sell anything from yourself as a pickup artist to a product or whatever, you have to get people to want to do something they may have initially resisted.
Yeah.
And so it's got to be kind of their idea as opposed to your idea.
Yeah.
And this gets back into that sales technique of, oh, you don't really want this. Oh, mm-hmm. maybe I do. Now it's like them selling you on you providing the product to them.
Mm-hmm. I love it when that happens.
Oh, it's so great.
It's so juicy.
Yeah.
Like I could just be at, this happened recently. I can't remember where, because I don't, wherever I was, it was just having simple, it was the prison.
Oh.
Believe it or not, I was generating business
in
prison.
Yeah.
When I was in prison. Actually, I was in prison and, they didn't even see me like do anything. We were just having a conversation about it, about how we apply improv in sales and customer service. And she said, "Can I get your card? We really need you in the governor's office."
And for those of you who aren't aware, look for, there was an episode where we interviewed Michelle Sirocco from Televerde, mm-hmm. which is a company that hires women in prison for telesales. And Gina recently went to an incarceration facility in Indianapolis and taught a number of these women.
Oh, it was
along with Michelle.
I've been talking about it a lot lately. You know, we refer to it a lot lately on episodes. So, if people get bored with it, I'm sorry. I'm still really excited about it.
It's a fascinating subject.
It really is. I could go on and on.
This one, number three, you know, kind of gets into the prospect, or the target, or however you want to line this up, has to own the idea.
Yeah.
And you can't change people's minds very easily. And so you've got to get them instead of changing their mind, you've got to get them to be in the mindset.
In the article, it says, when approaching a woman, a successful pickup artist always gives them a way out. For example, he might tell them they only have a few minutes to talk before he has to meet up with a friend. The idea is to create the impression that if their quarry decides to go out with them or go home with them, the decision was theirs and theirs alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that's the same thing as having a remorseful buyer, right? You don't want a remorseful buyer.
Yeah.
Because, and in today's world, you know, you might sell the product once, but then they never come back. And recurring revenue from a business perspective is so much more valuable than one-time transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's some analogies here than from a dating perspective that I won't get into. maybe for some of these pickup artists, the one-time transaction is better than the recurring revenue.
I guess it depends what you want. Do you want a one-time transaction or do you want recurring revenue? Recurring revenue to me is far easier than over and over and over again.
It's easier in some ways and harder in other ways.
Yeah.
But from a business perspective, it's certainly more valuable. You do have to be willing to fire your customers at times.
Yeah. I find it easier. You know, I just met with a client yesterday, and we were going through some executive coaching is why we were together. But, you know, I had to at some point go, hey, let's talk about next year. I'm like, do you want to talk about next year? Like, what do you, you know, because our contract is up in December. Right. And he's like, yeah, no, I do want to talk. I do see us continuing to work with you, but you have to put it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked about this on a relationship basis as well. Why isn't that conversation held in relationships? It's held in business, but it's not held in relationships. So what about next year? Are we going to renew this deal? Why should we? Why not?
Could you imagine if relationships were built that way? I kind of said that when we were putting together a partnership agreement. I'm like, boy, mm-hmm. if you could take the same concept in business of putting together a partnership agreement, right. although that comes with its own issues, if you could take that into a relationship.
Right.
And like have regular business meetings and look at it at the end of the year and plan for the next year.
Yeah. And we've talked about that a little bit, you know, in business leadership and management, it's really good to have a one-on-one, you know, with if you're a co-founder, with your partner, with those folks that you report to or that report to you, you know, have a regular one-on-one where you get into, you know, detailed questions of how things are going.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be interesting to do in a relationship on a regular basis?
No kidding. Yeah. I've actually brought that up before in relationships.
Yep.
I've said, especially for those who are non-emotional and hard to have a relationship because they have no emotions, I've tried to go, all right, let's think about this in business terms. I've literally said this. I'm like, let's look at it like I work for you and you give me a performance review and you tell me I need to be better at XYZ. And I say, can you give me some examples of how I could be better at that? And you say, I don't know.
Well, that's poor management.
Right. I'm like, that doesn't really set me up for success. Like, would you say that to an employee? I've actually said this in a relationship.
Right.
Like, tell me, I'm like, I can't perform and do the job if I don't know what it is you expect. Keith's cracking up. Well, I mean, you can take that however you want to take it. Have an open conversation, whether it's about performing at work or performing in the bedroom. Let's be real here.
Yeah, absolutely. And
you got to tell people what you want.
Yeah, you do. You have to be willing to do it. I'm a huge fan of this. And, you know, I've talked about this. I actually practice this in my relationships.
Oh, my God. I'd love to be a fly on the wall. You do have meetings, right?
Yeah, well, at least once a month, if not more often. And there's a format. There's specific questions. And everybody laughs. Oh, that's so.
Wait a second. Silly. I want and you actually like, have this as a format.
I do.
Can I get a copy of that?
Not yet.
I mean, you can edit out whatever you got to edit out.
Well, no, it's actually being copyrighted.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant.
This came up. So actually, you know, where this came up, we were talking about this at a prior episode. I had the opportunity to take part in Regina Thomashour's Mama Gina's, you know, she's the author of the book.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about pussy, a reclamation. And she did her final mastery session, which is her 3-day session in New York City a few months ago. And I had the opportunity to be in on it for about 3 hours. And and this was one of the things I talked about when I had the opportunity. And it was like people coming up to me afterwards, like, can I have that? Can I have that? Can I have that? And you've met my mentor, Candace, and she put a lot of that together. So
I love Candace.
Yeah. Amazing.
She is.
So going through a process there for that.
So what are you going to do with that document?
Sell it for, well, no, it's too expensive. You probably couldn't afford it.
I was going to say it would be a great download item on our website.
Interesting.
As a lead magnet.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Looking at using it in Candace's business as well. So maybe there's something there, Gina.
Uh-huh. There is. It's all coming together.
Yeah.
We still have 4 and 5 to talk about.
So focus on self-regulation.
Mm-hmm.
All your emotions are going to try to mess you up.
Mm-hmm.
They're there to confuse you. Just, you know, they may make you uncomfortable, but just ignore it. And it's this is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
His point is a little bit is like you've got to act the part, right?
Yeah.
You've got to master your emotions and you've got to act the part. And, you know, one of the best speakers in Vistage that I remember was a Broadway acting coach. And he came in to speak to us. You know, Vistage is a group of CEOs. And man, I just remember this so clearly. It had so much impact. He said, you know, from the moment you get out of your car as the CEO and you walk into the business, you are acting the role of CEO.
Mm-hmm.
You have to act it. If you let your emotions show up, you can derail things. And, you know, somebody asked me, well, isn't that insincere? And it's, I don't really think it is. I mean, you know, we talk about being a good actor, good actions and so forth, and recognizing that you're in a position of leadership and that you're trying to go somewhere and that you're a steward of where this organization is going. And so you have to act in its best interest.
Mm-hmm.
And acting in its best interest is acting like a leader. And if something frightening happens, like your biggest customer pulls out and you don't know where payroll is going to come from next week, you've got to walk around with that smile on your face, confident as can be. You cannot act otherwise. It's the same way in sales. If you're unsure of yourself, if you're unsure of your product, you know, that's going to come across. And
yeah, why I'm not going to buy something that you're unsure of if you're selling and you're selling it to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the, you know, the best things in life are, you know, created through discomfort.
Yeah. So, like going to prison.
Yeah. Like going to prison.
Scared shitless. And now it's like the best thing I could have done.
Yeah. And you were only there for a few hours.
I know. Jeez. You will blurt out the wrong thing at the wrong time. You will fail to approach or approach too soon. You will stick around for too long. You will tense up. You will freak out. Fortunately, there's a way around this. You must consistently work on calming your internal state. That means the means of doing this will be different for each person. For some, it might be regular, vigorous exercise. For others, it may be meditation. Some with more deeply entrenched blocks may need to find a good therapist. That's what I do. This, to me, is really about emotional intelligence, right? So self-regulation is emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many times have you seen somebody, we've all done this, right? Oh, he makes it look so easy. Oh, she makes it look so easy.
Yeah.
After practicing it for 10,000 hours.
Right, right. It's when people go, oh, that business, like, it just skyrocketed overnight. No, no, it's been 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just noticed it now.
And so this is practice. And this is from a sales and from a pickup perspective, probably. Have not read this book.
Bet you are. You're going to now, right? Bet.
It is, you know, role playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the wonderful things you teach in your sales improv training. You know, that's that practice, so you can get used to that. You know, in the real world. I remember that one exercise where, you know, I say something, then you have to say something on top of that. Then I have to mm-hmm. say something, you know, and just that's carrying on a conversation and making it interesting. That takes practice.
Right. People laugh when I say that our performers have to go to practice. They're like, mm-hmm. how do you practice improv? I'm like, it's a brain thing. We're exercising our brain.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's things our brain is doing, listening, paying attention, observing, regulating emotions, all of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the repeated behavior that drives in, you know, one of the things we used to do in our sales group was, I'm a big fan. Oh, we've talked about questions a few times on this podcast. So I'm a huge fan of questions.
And I'm not.
Yeah, you are. you just don't know it. So you know, we would have practice sessions where you couldn't say anything except a question. So, you know, I'd go into the sales area and I'd ask a question, and you better ask me a question back. You
know? Oh yeah, we talked about this on that episode, because we have an improv exercise that's only questions.
Yeah, so it's reflecting, but it's so many salespeople show up and throw up.
Oh,
and yeah. And so many guys approach a woman and then just start talking about themselves and it's like, no.
Yeah, I've been there. My eyes glazed over. Uh-huh. I'm like, is he ever going to stop talking about himself?
Right.
Oh my God. And then I start doing a grocery list in my head. And then I'm like, oh, he's done talking. Shit, mm-hmm. What did he just say?
Yeah. Yeah. For that person, just whip out your copy of How to Win Friends and Influence People and say, go read this.
Or here, go take an improv class.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Number five, engage in relentless experimentation. Ooh, I love to experiment. Mystery became a master seducer by educating himself through books, audio programs, and seminars. But he quickly realized that while this education was essential, it wasn't enough. To truly learn something, anything, it must be practiced. That's what we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? No knowledge sticks until it becomes embodied as a habit. Book learning is important, but it's never sufficient. There are people out there that will read every sales book or every leadership book out there, go to every seminar, sign up for every webinar, and it's like education overload.
Yeah. And you know, there's that book, you can't teach a kid to ride a bike at a seminar or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know about the book, but I love the title. The phrase is amazing, right?
Yeah.
You can't learn to ride a bike at a seminar. You got to go and skin your knees. You know, you've got to go.
Exactly.
And you know, it says in here, there's a couple of things to this comment that I just love. What made Mystery and Style so successful with women is they took the theory into bars and clubs. They approached hundreds of women and got rejected hundreds of times. So they failed and they failed and they failed and they failed.
And they said hundreds of stupid things.
Yeah. So they tried. So this really raises a question in my mind. Are they master seducers or are they playing the numbers?
Mm.
And I don't know that it really matters, because it's just like in sales. You've got to make so many phone calls to get a conversation. You've got to have so many conversations to have a meaningful conversation. So a part of sales is a numbers game.
It's definitely a numbers game, and I think it's the combination of numbers and practice. Because what I've learned over the years in anything, right? The more you do something, the more you learn.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with human behavior, right? Some of the things start to become organic, right?
If you have emotional intelligence, you learn.
Correct. Which I'm so into. Like, that's a big, we've been doing a lot of that. We've had a lot of requests for that training.
Right.
Because that's big.
Yeah.
If you're emotionally intelligent, you can do those things.
Right.
Go ahead.
I think if you play the numbers alone work, and the learning from them works, and when you can combine the two is when it really becomes powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to be vulnerable enough to be willing to be emotionally intelligent.
Yeah.
And then you have to go through the practice of doing it.
Yeah, and that's what so many people, you know, it gets back to the number one reason people don't do well in sales is because of they get tired of rejection. And you've got to be willing to fail in pretty much everything you do, but in sales, it's just so magnified. Yeah. And in picking up women, it's pretty magnified as well. You've just got to be ready to fail. Oh, you know what this reminds me of also is we talked a few episodes ago about Dave Asprey and one of his books.
Game Changers.
Game Changers. And one of the things that he talks about in that book, one of the, you know, 50-something techniques he suggests, one of the things is making outrageous asks. And he was talking about this, do this experiment where you ask 100 people for outrageous things. And yeah, you're going to get rejected a lot of times, but you're going to be surprised by how many times you don't. But we are all so unwilling to ask in the first place. You know, just one of the things working with salespeople is, did you ask for the business specifically? And a lot of sale, you know, a lot of unsuccessful or new salespeople don't do a specific ask for the business.
Or an ask for a referral.
Right.
And ask for anything. Like, well, I'm crazy. I ask for everything.
Yeah, but you're not afraid of failure.
No, because it's a big part of improv. We're taught to fail.
Yeah. And what's interesting is the more you set yourself up like that, the more you're taught to fail, the more you start to embrace failure, the less you experience.
And the more you fail, the more innovative you become. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that because I've failed at things where I'm like, oh, but something else magical came from it.
Yeah. Oh, and that exercise we did that time, you know, the reinforced no exercise,
mm-hmm.
where I got to ask you for all the things I want and you have to tell me no, so I can get used to hearing no, so I can get used to failing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll put a link in this episode back to that episode.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's that relentless experimentation. What works? And try it and see if it works. And you know what? If it fails, try something new.
Well, and that goes hand in hand with pattern
interrupt,
right? Because another thing that we do in improv, we actually have a class. I'm actually teaching it in a few weeks because my performers are begging for it. I only teach it once a year, but it's a patterns class. And it's training the brain to look for patterns in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've learned from it is that's how I've gotten so good at looking at patterns in sales, because I've really learned how to watch how an audience reacts to things.
Right, right.
And finding the pattern and then going, oh, okay, I need to change that, or, oh, I know what's going to happen next, so I'm going to do this.
Yeah, and that's emotional intelligence at a more macro level, right? You're not just doing it with one person, you're doing it with a group.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to turn that class into its own training curriculum. Maybe I'll have you look at it, because there's something there with it. There's something there with it.
Yeah. So where do you like to go to get picked up?
No, you didn't just do that. Did you just do that?
Well, I thought that's what this podcast was about.
No, it was about hype and these five ways pickup artists we can learn from them for sales. What's the worst pickup experience?
I mean, you and your other hot friends are sitting around at the bar having an occasional drink or whatever.
I'm trying to think. It's been like long since that ever happened in a bar. I can't.
Okay, in a classroom, whatever. I just know it happens. I'm sure it happens all the time. So,
I'm definitely I'm definitely hit on all the time when I travel. So there's that. And I'm trying to dial into some of those without giving too many details. It'll come to me. I can't remember. You just flustered me. Oh, okay. Well, I've had one one guy say to me, in a local bar, a local beach bar that's kind of a major dive. And I was just coming from a Vistage event. It was a Vistage outing. And I was meeting some friends in this dive bar, and this really good-looking guy walked in, which got everyone's attention because he was, like, dressed extremely well, like, really put together, really handsome, sat near us, and proceeded.
So he crafted his external packaging.
Yeah, he crafted his external packaging. And we all started talking. Well, he was eavesdropping on us, on our conversation, and something in that conversation, something he said got my attention. So I literally got up and walked around to sit next to him to talk to him because he was an intellect. I went to find out he was a psychologist. He was a former Vistage member. I was like, oh my gosh, like you would never find that in Myrtle Beach. And then he said, "You don't look like you belong here."
Pattern interrupt.
That was, I was like, damn. I said, you're right. You're
creating,
right.
Creating the perception of autonomy. I love it.
Because I was like, you don't look like you belong here. I mean, look around. I mean, I came, you know, dressed from business, right? And I'm in a dive bar.
He's so like, did you follow up with, well, where do I belong? Because I can see exactly where this is going.
No, that's it. That was it. That was all there was to it. There's nothing else to be said about that. Nope. No. So this episode's over an hour long.
Oh, wow.
But it's fascinating. I'm sure people will continue to listen to it. Our listeners like to listen when they're in the car or they're getting ready for work.
Yeah.
So today we were talking about, basically this was taking Michael Shine's article that he wrote about the game, penetrating the secret society of pickup artists. And he wrote an article about that was shut down and Forbes wouldn't run it. And I really thought those five traits were really interesting to talk about from a sales perspective. So,
yeah, I didn't really see anything in that article that was like worth not running.
And what's controversial? I don't get what was controversial about it at all.
Yeah, I don't see anything controversial in it either.
I would love to know why they said that. So anyway, that's our episode today. It was, as always, fun having Keith all to myself for a minute.
Oh.
So thanks to all of our Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. We miss Rachel, but she's doing mommy things, which she needs to do. And Keith and I are just hanging out, talking.
Having fun.
Having
working
fun.
On our pickup techniques.
Working on our pickup techniques. Yep. Mm-hmm. We all got to have a little game. So
yeah, this
thanks
is good
for
preparation. I got to go out tonight and see what.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to have to text a friend of yours. And yeah, so thanks for listening. If you want to find out more about me, you can go to GinaTremarco.com and there's information there about my company, Pivot 10 Results, and Carolina Improv. And for Rachel, I can't remember where to find her, but you can find her at Women Your Mother Warned You About .com. And Keith, we can find you there too.
Yeah, go to Women Your Mother Warned You About .com and look up about or something like that.
You'll find
all of us, and you'll find a link to my only social media.
His only social media is LinkedIn, but sometimes he stalks Facebook privately. no, I'm just kidding.
Prior to going out and trying to do some pickups.
Just kidding. So go to our website, check that out. There's some great free downloads there. And if you haven't had a chance, give us a rating and review. You can go to iTunes to do that, or wherever you listen to your podcast. We like iTunes. Because I think that's like the mothership of getting reviews. We're currently running at a 4.8 out of 5. That's weird. I don't know why, because it looks like we have all fives. But anyway, give us a review. I think that's all I got. You got anything else?
What you got is good.
Okay. All right, let's go. I'm going to say goodbye to our Warners. Well, first let's say goodbye. Bye, Keith.
Bye, Gina.
Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
It doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.